Good day, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to today's Norske Skog conference call. For your information, today's conference is being recorded. At this time, I would like to turn the conference over to Mr. Tom Rogn. Please go ahead, sir.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the first quarter conference call from Norske Skog. My name is Tom Rogn. I'm the head of investor relations. I'm joined by the CEO, Sven Ombudstvedt, the CFO, Rune Gjessing, and the Senior Vice President of Commercial Operations, Jan Klaten. Firstly, Ombudstvedt will give a short introduction before we open up for Q&A.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to this call. A few words from my side, just to briefly frame the first quarter 2013. We had an EBITDA which was about half of what the average was in 2012, mainly due to lower prices as a resultant of the European macro environment, which turned negative last year in the fourth quarter and had the price effect for us now in the first half of the year. It's also important to note that if you compare the former quarters, going back to the first quarter of 2012, there are some significant portfolio changes that happened with the disposals and mill closures, which means that it's probably more relevant to look at the comparison from the fourth quarter. We also have a volume effect to support prices, where we held back deliberately some volumes in January in particular, and in particular in the European lightweight coated segment. The cash flow is negative by 106 from operations. In addition to this, we invest as guided in our main development project with the Boyer conversion and the Saugbrugs energy efficiency project, which all in all leads to a net debt increase. The increase is about 450 million NOK, of which just under 200 is related to currency translation effects, and the other is then the cash outlay from investments and from operations. In operational cash flow, we have also paid in the quarter significant redundancy and closure payments related to the machine closure in New Zealand. So with those few introductory remarks, I would like to open the session for Q&A.
Certainly. If you would like to ask a question at this time, please press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your telephone. Please ensure that the mute function on your telephone is switched off to allow your signals to reach our equipment. Once again, please press star 1 if you wish to ask a question at this time. We will now pause for just a moment to allow everyone to signal. And we take our first question from Lisa Barash of UBS. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I was wondering if you could comment on what sort of price increases you think you can realistically achieve in the second half of the year. I see a comment, I think it's on Bloomberg, that you see meaningful improvement in prices, and just wondering if you could elaborate a bit more on what your definition of meaningful is.
Yes, I think so far we can only look at more theoretical models looking at supply and demand and the industry's operating rates. We have it's too early for meaningful commercial price discussions, but I think the closures that we have seen, if you assume that the consumption development in Europe is more or less the same in the second quarter as it is in the first quarter, I think you would then see that newsprint reference prices would probably start around 500 and would at least start with a 5 again. So reference price today in this relationship is about 460-470 euros delivered for newsprint.
Okay, thank you. And then I was just wondering if you could comment a bit more on magazine. I guess, you know, why margins were where they were in the quarter, which was pretty low, and what the outlook is, I guess, for the next quarter and then for the remainder of the year, please.
Yes, the magazine segment is particularly heavily hit by the macro environment, and we have deliberately taken market downtime at our mills. So we took out about 50,000 tons of lightweight coal in the first quarter and particularly in the first part of the first quarter, in order to try to stabilize prices. So That is probably the main effect. The uncoated segment is somewhat better. We have both maybe slightly less impact from the macro and also some downgrading from lightweight coated products.
Any comments on the outlook?
I think the outlook, we have an upgrading margin from newsprint to the magazine grades, which is somewhat below the historical averages of around 100 euros first from newsprint to uncoated and then another 100 to lightweight coated. I think we are still have been for some time below that level. We will certainly aim to regain that, but depending a little bit on where the newsprint prices is, I assume that we will try to see similar price increases for the magazine products.
Okay, thanks.
Our next question comes from Lars Kjellberg of Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Yeah, just coming back to the newsprint prices. Of course, there's been good pressure on these prices for quite some time, and most part of the industry obviously did go for a price increase heading into this year. How should we view, you know, the market that took the longest to negotiate prices in was Germany, and yet prices still dropped, you know, between 5%-6% in that market. What would happen? Why would prices succeed now? Is that because the pressures are so big? You know, if demand continues to decline to the tune of the first quarter, i.e., 5%-6%, should we not expect further capacity closures to actually bring this market back into balance to make a price increase viable?
I think you're absolutely right that this is a question of supply and demand. When we talked signals, price signals for first quarter 2013 in October of last year, we still had a reasonable balanced market, but then we were hit heavily by a consumption decline, particularly in the fourth quarter of last year, which then led to a downward pressure on prices. The reference pricing in Germany that you see now, which you correctly point out, is down about 5% from fourth quarter to first quarter and indeed into the second quarter. I think this is now supported by the closures that has indeed taken effect since the beginning of the year and the further announcement. We believe now that there is a different operating rate. Of course, we still have a few weeks to go before we're into the second half, and the consumption is still unknown for that period of time. But if we assume a similar consumption development in the second quarter as we had in the first quarter, I think our pricing comments are still sound. But obviously, as in any commodity industry, it's a game of supply and demand, and if either of them move, then of course the prices will also reflect that. And having said all that, we would certainly welcome more mill closures, no doubt about that. And we take our own measures as we do with the temporary idling of one machine in Norway from June onwards.
Sure. The one biggest concern I would think, I think you did comparatively well in the European business, given the conditions that you have. The precipitous fall in the newsprint business outside Europe and the exceptionally poor margins that we now have in that market, and as you pointed out, 22% decline through February in Oceania and demand. Where do you see that business landing? I mean, that was used to be your cash cow, and apparently now it's not anymore. Obviously, you're reinvesting in the business at this moment, but how do you see that business developing going forward? Because you need to make money down there.
Absolutely. I think there are several factors influencing this. Of course, the comparison to the fourth quarter is influenced by a positive one-off in Brazil in the fourth quarter, which has nothing to do with Australasia. But it's true that the margins are lower in this quarter, and the main reasons is the restructuring we're doing in New Zealand, which has disrupted that operations in the fourth and the first quarter of this year. And there's also seasonally a relatively weak first quarter, which is not new this year. When it comes to the consumption, the PPPC figures for the two first months is down 22%. We have seen, obviously, a domestic consumption shortfall in Australia, but more in the tune of of 17% rather than 22%. Of course, it's a serious figure, but we still believe that the year will be somewhat better than 17%. Also, we're looking more at lower double digit rather than high double digit, sort of high teens decline rates. Overall, we certainly will have a year of transition with restructuring in New Zealand and the mill conversion or the machine conversion in Australia. It remains a year of conversion, but we still have a sound basis there, and the base volume domestically and the cost competitiveness of these mills are still quite good. You would expect a somewhat higher margin going forward than what we see today.
With that said, you know, and given that your cash flow was obviously clearly negative for various reasons in Q1, your debt metrics, of course, are moving quite sharply in the wrong direction. When do you see you turning a corner and actually starting to bring down that net debt to EBITDA? You know, I suppose it was close, well above 5x on the LTM basis in Q1. Annualized, of course, it's a completely different number again if you take Q1 as a starting point. When do you need, you really need to see that go down at some stage? When do you see that turning point?
I think there are two aspects to that question. One is the margins, the EBITDA, and the other is the debt itself. I think we would certainly see a higher margin and higher EBITDA numbers even for the remainder of 2013 and beyond. The second is the, let's call it the cash conversion or the debt reduction that we are able to do. I think we have over the last year shown that we have a relatively high cash conversion even from relatively low levels of EBITDA. I think we will also this year generate cash and bring down the net debt. Both of those will be better than if you take this quarter as a starting point. There is no doubt about it.
What would drive earnings higher in specifically if you take Q2? Do you have any?
I think Q2, there is some seasonality effects, some volume effects, but Q2, it's unlikely that we have a price, positive price effect that will come from Q3 and onwards. There is an element of price increases in that statement, and there is an element of help from the macro environment over a little bit longer time than 2013. I think that's the main reasons. When it comes to the cash flow as such, the cash conversion or the free cash flow is obviously traditionally higher in the second half. We did build some stocks from December to March, mainly because December is very low, and you see the start of the year is weak volume-wise, and that there is somewhat higher volumes in March, April. You have some increases, and obviously, we don't have the redundancy payments going forward. There will be a higher cash conversion in the coming quarters.
Very good. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Ronan Clarke of Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Hi there. I was just wondering, have you had begun discussions with your RCF lenders yet regarding a waiver for Q2? Will you be discussing potential drawing for funding the June coupons as well? That's my first question, please.
Yeah. I think the bank discussion is an ongoing discussion. I think we've said this before, and we still continue to discuss on practically a daily basis with our banks. When it comes to the availability of the facility, of course, the facility is available to us unencumbered now, including the period where the interest is due. I think that then we will see at the point in time if we need to use it or not. We have obviously used this facility in the past, and we have it for these types of purposes. If we will use it or not remains to be seen. There is still a lot of, let's say, cash flow items hitting our books before that time. That's a bit early to say if we will use it or not.
Okay. What's now the minimum cash you think you need to run the business given the restructuring?
It's a bit lower, obviously, than what we've said in the past. We talked about $500 million-$700 million as sort of free liquidity that we need to have. I still think it's it's difficult because behind that question, why do you need this cash? You need it obviously if you have fluctuations in payments within a short period of time, and you need it for some trapped cash, to particularly on energy procurement side. So it's probably slightly below what we've guided before, but it's maybe not tremendously below. It's still a business turning over last year about 16 billion, maybe a little bit less this year, but it's still a relatively big company in terms of turnover. So we still probably need a minimum cash balance, which is probably around at minimum 500 million.
Right. So maybe about 450 is surplus liquidity at the moment.
It depends on what you think of as surplus liquidity, but obviously, ideally, of course, we want to have a bank facility which is used to take care of most of it, and then the liquidity can be used for other purposes. But that's in the situation we are, where we have these relatively frequent covenant discussions, we probably run, we need to also run with some liquidity in the business.
Yeah. And I presume that the timing of the last one quarter reset was based on management accounts of these numbers, at least for January and February. So that was a decision to do one quarter. Presumably, the next discussions will be one quarter again to await the turnaround in the second half. Is that what we should expect, or are you-
That is, it's not really possible to give you a precise guidance on, as we would obviously have preferred to have a reset of the remaining period. The six quarters, we did eventually have to do one, because the importance of actually getting this done was high, and we also realized that we pay for this, obviously, and we had no problems in reducing the size of the facility as the commitment fee is coming down. But it's sort of a give and take, and I think everyone, I think the banks and ourselves, would ideally like to have a bit medium to longer term solution to what this facility needs to look like. Today, it's not really practical for any of us.
Yeah.
But I think it's no secret that inside the bank group, there is different motivations for why they are there, and this means that this is a rather cumbersome thing.
Okay. Just finally on your cash flow items, how much committed restructuring cash do you have for the remainder of the year? What do you think CapEx will be for the full year, and what's working capital likely to be for the full year?
I think when it comes to the CapEx first, the guidance is 600 million. We did about 150 in the first quarter, so we're quite on that if you multiply by four. But obviously, we have not necessarily committed the full 600. There's some two big projects and a lot of smaller items in there. And it's clear that we can possibly reduce somewhat from the 600, but the guidance probably remains around 600. When it comes to the working capital, I think we have, as I said, we built some in the first quarter. Traditionally, it comes down towards the year end, and it will also do this year. So I think we will probably release some working capital, but it's not going to be massive amounts of cash unless we do further restructuring. So, and then, finally, when it comes to restructuring payments, there is not a lot unless we do new, if we make new decisions, which requires this. So the restructuring in Australia is done, practically speaking, in the first quarter, and there is no further permanent closure.
Right. Okay, thank you. That's helpful.
Our next question comes from Nitin Dias of J.P. Morgan. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. Had a few questions. The first one was on the RCF. I know you commented on a previous call that you may draw it down to pay the interest payments. And obviously, your covenants get tighter. So should we imply that you're fairly confident that you can reset the covenants for the next quarter and the rest of the year if you want to draw it down? Yeah, that's the first question.
We're confident that this facility is available to us, and if we need or want to use it, we can indeed use it. So I think the answer is probably close to a yes.
Understood. And when you're talking about a reset, and again, I think you briefly commented on that previously. I guess you're looking for a 6-quarter reset or a 5-quarter reset from now. But are you working on a 1-quarter rolling basis reset right now, or how do you think about it?
We think about it in the sense that I think both the bank groups and we would like to have a more permanent solution than the present facility, which has been unworkable for most of its life so far, in terms of that we came out in the wrong track when it comes to these covenants, as we forgot in relatively meaningful impact currency can have on EBITDA. So it was reset first for 1 year, then we had reset now for the 5th quarter, and then obviously we would have liked to reset it for the rest of the period. That was not to be, so we will either reset covenants as we can, or we will find all the solutions for this type of financing needs. But for us, it has been important to keep the banks with us and to maintain the facility unencumbered.
Understood. And when you're talking about other options, are you referring to securitization or asset disposals, or a bit of both?
Or even a new facility with the banks. I think we cannot exclude any possibility.
Okay, that's helpful. The second question was on your debt maturities for the remainder of the year, which is about 69, 129, and 24 for the next 3 quarters. Should we assume that they need to be repaid, or can they be rolled over?
Well, the short-term debt, if you like, the smaller debts are booked and seen as short-term, but are more long-term in nature. So there's export credit facilities and the like, which we've had for quite some time.
Okay, so of this roughly 200 odd million, which is maturing in the next 3 quarters, should we assume that can be rolled over pretty much on a regular basis?
You can see that from time to time that we raise and repay loans on sort of minor amounts, and this is related to say local financing, which we use in some of the facilities, which are rather favorable, but they have, of course, a long-term relationship to our local facilities. As long as we operate these facilities, I think these can be rolled over.
Understood. Thanks so much. Let me go back into the queue.
Our next question comes from Raul Sequeira of JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. The first question I had with respect to your talking about asset disposals that you've identified. So, and I know you've continuously alluded to that. Shall we assume that anything but Europe and Australia could potentially be for sale? And could you actually indicate to us what the EBITDA contributions of those assets would be? For the first quarter 2013, effectively?
Well, first of all, it's true that the Asian and the Latin American operations that remain are indeed, first of all, possible to sell from a more technical point of view, and secondly, something we would seriously consider, but we would only consider it if we find that the price reflects the EBITDA contribution. I'm not going to comment specifically on particular mills' EBITDA contribution, but I can assure you that we will only dispose them if we have an opportunity to do that at a meaningful multiple of their present contribution.
The other question I had is with respect to the debt maturity profile, because I understand that in the press conference it was alluded that obviously the significant amount of debt maturities coming due in 14, 15, 16, and 17 are a very important issue to tackle. And basically that there would be potentially various initiatives that could be undertaken. Can you actually give us a little more color with what initiatives, I mean, are basically asset disposal including in these, or for example, as you said, on your RCF, or a combination of your RCF asset disposal and potential securitization? Could you also remind us where you stand with respect to the securitization of receivables? Are the discussions going on with potential third parties that could provide you some liquidity there?
I think you're right that it could be one or several of these measures, or even other measures in this respect. So I think there is still quite a few options to be explored. What we said then regarding the 14 to the 17 maturities is that we are now approaching a time where it's 12 months left to the June 14 maturities, where it's natural for us to start looking more actively and to be prepared for any possible windows of opportunity in terms of financing. If you go back to recent history, you could say that the 2011 and 2012 maturities were refinanced in May, June 2011, as an example. So we were always looking to be a little bit obviously advanced of the curves. This is not only depending on our own financial situation, but certainly also financial markets in general. So that's why we obviously increase a little bit the focus on the 14 maturity now.
Okay.
But that is more sort of how we prioritize and work internally than when it comes to the actual solutions. You have mentioned several examples, and you could probably theoretically imagine all the solutions also. When it comes to specifically to securitization, and I don't think that we have worked on this in the past. We have not succeeded, and until there is something there, I don't think we will venture into any discussion. It remains a theoretical option, but for the time being, we don't have any particular things to report on.
Okay, and I have a last question, actually, if I may, because you were talking about the reduction in capacity undertaking in Europe, actually, since the beginning of the year, of approximately a million tons on an annualized basis, that could actually rebalance the market for newsprint, for example. But if we basically look at the first quarter of 2013 in actual demand in Europe, and if we also look at the export situation, that actually I understand was very, very favorable for European manufacturers. For example, I'm looking at your fourth quarter presentation, and exports were up 17%. Do you believe that, number one, obviously, that very attractive 17% growth could be repeated? And do you think that actually going to create an additional problem in that supply-demand imbalance in Europe? Because if, for example, exports don't grow as fast as they were growing last year, and demand continues to decline double digit, we could end ourselves in a situation where the supply-demand imbalance is actually unchanged at the end of the year because of, for example, the export is not there to adjust any potential imbalances that were prevailing last year.
I think in general, it's true that over the last few years we've seen more exports out of Europe, particularly in newsprint, but this year we see that lots of the European producers are withdrawing from the export market. So I think we see that there will probably be ups and downs in the export, so no permanent growth. And I think we, even with the demand shortfalls we see in the first quarter for newsprint, we still believe that the capacity closures are enough to bring the industry, even with less exports, into healthy operating rate terrain.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Edmund Darwan of GSO Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking the question. I just wanted to clarify, I think it was mentioned that in the ex-Europe newsprint business, the EBITDA in this quarter is a bit lower because of some of the reorganization initiatives that's happening there. Would you mind kind of quantifying how much of the kind of costs are related to this reorganization that is included in the EBITDA for the quarter?
I think that you have several aspects there. One is, of course, a one-off last year if you compare to last year, but the disturbances in the operations this year is related to the machine shutdown at the Tasman mill, and we've seen this also in the past, that operations during these type of shutdowns are significantly impacted. So while I'm not going to quantify specifically, it means that the New Zealand operation basically did contribute to our results in the first quarter, which traditionally will do on a reasonably good basis. So this is sort of management needs to rebalance with a new setup, new organizational setup, with supply of raw materials. You have to get out of contract. You have to take take maybe more timber than you need for a certain period of time. You have to rebalance energy, et cetera. So that is what is behind it. But
some of these costs that you described are effectively not included in the OPEX line of that flows into EBITDA, and then the additional payments for the restructuring is on top of that.
Correct.
Okay. Okay, that's the only question I had. Thanks.
Our next question comes from Cecile Oxbox of Brigade Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, thanks. Could you give us just a bit more of a granular outlook for Q2? And then just on the, I guess, following on from the previous question, whether you've seen any improvement as regards demand in news in Australia. Thank you.
When it comes to Q2, in general, I think the cost picture on the variable cost is quite flat. The fixed costs are a little bit down, so on the cost side, you can expect a relatively flat development globally for the company. Volume-wise, it's a little bit higher because of what I have mentioned also before, that we held back some volumes in January in particular in Europe. And that
will be magazine or news?
It was a little bit across the board, but where we had the biggest impact was in the lightweight coated segments, so magazine.
Right, that's the 50,000 tons you previously mentioned.
Yes. When it comes to the demand side, we see sort of in Europe, we see that the first quarter into the second quarter, it's not so big differences there. And in Australia, compared to the reported PPPC number of minus 22% for the first years, it's a bit better than that. But we still are sort of in the mid-teens when it comes to sort of demand shortfalls domestically in Australia, so we're still in relatively major negative territory. The other significant sort of outlook point in addition is that international prices seems to have hit the bottom and are rebounding, starting in Asia for newsprint.
Okay, and so just to follow up on, I guess, on the rest of the world segment, how should I think about profitability within that between Australia and, I guess, your LATAM Brazilian business and Asia?
So relatively speaking, of course, Asia and LATAM is much smaller than Australia, but the profitability of Brazil has been helped by the sort of relatively speaking weaker reais. So the margins in LATAM is quite good. The margins domestically in Australia and New Zealand is quite good, while the Asian margins, including our Asian operations, are lower.
Okay. Because previously you'd sort of said, I understand that obviously Q4 was a particularly good quarter in terms of profitability for the rest of the world segment. I guess some of that relates to one-off payments in Brazil, right? But I think you'd sort of said that the target was going to be north of 15, possibly up to 17%, and now we're at sort of the 12% level.
Yep.
And should I think about that all in being, all a result of the measures that you had at, Tasman, or is that resulting of something else also?
I think 2013 in general is a year of transition, both because of the Tasman closure, but also that we are converting one paper machine in Australia from newsprint over into catalog. So I probably 2013 is going to be below the historical average of this business, and probably you will see an improvement going forward after the New Zealand restructuring, but you will still. It will improve further in 2014 with the conversion in Australia.
Okay, so you'd think the 15% is probably going to be the max that you'd be able to achieve in that division?
No, I think it could be higher. But then we are talking about after the conversion of the paper machine next year.
Okay. And that's going to be finished this year, is that correct?
It's commissioning early parts of first quarter 2014.
Okay. Thank you. So that's all I had.
As a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star 1. If you find that your question has already been answered, you may remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. We take our next question from Theodore Stamos of Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you. I just had a few questions. The first one is, could you give us an idea on prices? How much of Q1 was impacted by the average lower prices? I'm just trying to get an idea as to how much more impacted Q2 could be versus Q1.
Can you, sorry, I did not catch your question.
Lower prices, how much of Q1 did you transact at the lower prices? I'm assuming it kind of happened slowly over time, and maybe by mid Q1 is when you kind of hit the absolute lower price levels. And I'm assuming that Q2 might actually have the lower price for like the entire quarter. So I was trying to get an idea as to quarter on quarter how much the timing of the price change could impact Q2.
Unfortunately, the effect was for the full volume on the new prices. So the full quarter is on the lower prices.
Okay.
It's unfortunate for the first quarter, but maybe positive for your question.
And then on working capital, you've answered a couple times. I'm still not entirely clear. Are you forecasting for the cash flow associated with working capital to be slightly positive for the full year?
Yes.
Okay. And then just on asset sales, really quick, this question's also been asked, but I'm just wondering, since 2013 is shaping up to be a bit weaker probably than any of us expected, are you actively going out now and being a little bit more proactive in trying to sell these assets, or you still just view them as something you just receive opportunistic bids on?
I think we have been and are still active, but it's clear that it's not necessarily business as you sell on a very short period of time. So I think we will need to get a good price in order to sell them, but at the same time they are for sale. So I think we, in that balance, it's impossible to give a guidance on when that possibly can happen. But it's clear that we have also in the past been able to divest assets at reasonable prices. So I still think we will be able to do that, but giving more specific timing on it, I think, is impossible for the time being.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Linus Larsson of SEB. Please go ahead.
Yes, thank you very much, and a good afternoon. Just coming back and making another attempt on the topic of the deteriorating profitability in the non-European operations. I understand there was a negative impact from the restructuring work at Tasman. Could you add some color in helping us bridging the EBITDA decline in Q1 compared to Q4? I understand there was this one-off positive also in Brazil in Q4. How much was that, and what are the other moving elements there?
You can make the attempt, but it doesn't really change the answer. So this, you have mentioned the factors, and that's what they are. So the EBITDA margin was too high when it was in the 20s, and it's too low when it's at 12. So over time, you would expect it to be 15 plus probably in this type of business, but we cannot give you any more explicit guidance on what these numbers are.
Okay, and when it comes to the changes in Australasia, could you describe a bit where you are in that process? And the aim of that question is obviously to better understand if there's a pickup in profitability already in the second quarter, or if that's something that we should expect later in this process.
No, I think the first of all, in Australia, the first quarter is always a little bit hampered by their summer, so the first quarter is always seasonally a bit weaker. But at the same time, clearly the restructuring that we're doing in Tasmania means that the volumes which are gone, and we will have a somewhat smaller business, and we're still converting out another machine at Boyer, which only has a positive new cash flow from 2014 onwards. So I don't expect that we will see sort of a hockey stick where everything goes back up in the second quarter, but it will be, obviously, the next quarters will be after the restructuring at Tasman has been completed, and thus will be somewhat better. But it's not going to shoot up by any specific events.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Mark Wade of HSBC. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gents. Most have been answered, but just two quick things. You talk about, and we talked about this after the last earnings, about the composition of the bank group and the participants with different motivations. Clearly, pretty clear it comes down to one particular entity. In terms of removing that entity, you know, from the bank group, how easy is that to facilitate? And in terms of taking the next stage of the financing profile, have you started to engage with the, or at least identify the holders of the next year's NOKI bond loans? Clearly those are the ones with the more restrictive negative pledge language. Have you started to either engage with the identify through the trustee yet? And in terms of coming to the next stage of the bank facility, does that tie up with the removal of those bonds?
The first question, when it comes to how easy is it to remove banks from the facility, history shows that it's not so easy. A short answer to that question. The second, when it comes to the NOK bonds, the trustee, and it's true that the language is relatively restrictive in the NOK bonds. So we would clearly work on that with the assumption we will certainly just pay it off as we would any other debt. We'll work on the financing of the company on that basis. I don't think that the bank discussions per se is necessarily linked to that in any way, and I think we still want and need to have a facility which has to take care of our flexibility in terms of volatility in our cash flows, and we still need to obviously deal with the maturities as and when they come. I don't think there is any specific link there.
But it's fair to say that in due course, you know, markets allowing for this, that we should anticipate, you know, certainly your preferred route would be to some sort of formalized term loan and then a much smaller RCF.
Yes, from an ideal point of view, yes. Sure.
Thanks.
Our next question comes from Eriko Miyazaki-Ross of Barclays. Please go ahead.
Hi there, thanks for taking the questions. So I've got a couple from my side. Firstly, can you tell me what you currently have outstanding under, and excuse the pronunciation here, the Innovation Norge facility, and can you tell me whether that's an amortizing facility? And if I understand correctly, the RCF covenants also apply to that facility, is that right? And then I've got a couple more which I'll ask after, if that's okay.
The second question is the easiest, yes, it's right. Maybe, Irene, do you want to answer the... You didn't hear it, I will repeat the question. The question is, the Innovation Norge loan, how much do we have outstanding and how is it amortized?
It's around 200 million NOK outstanding on that loan, and it's paying, I think it's 12.5 each twice a year.
So 25 million a year, right?
Yeah.
Okay, and the RCF covenants apply to that facility, is that right?
Yes.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you very much. And then in terms of your pricing expectations in the Australasia region, can you perhaps provide a little bit of colour on that, given the demand declines that you've indicated for the rest of the year?
Yeah, the pricing in Australia is set on a long-term contract, so the prices are fixed in the contract until summer of 2015. So you could say we don't really have the price risk, we have the volume risk in this contract.
Okay, that's helpful. And then lastly, you obviously talked about expecting to generate cash over the course of 2013. Just to clarify, is that from your operations or is that inclusive of asset sales?
We will still probably generate cash from operations. We will do what is necessary to generate cash in general, but that comment was meant excluding asset sales, or let's say EBITDA generating asset sales.
Right, okay, that's helpful. And then lastly, in terms of the asset sales, obviously, that you've indicated, one in Latin America and I think one in Asia as well, in terms of valuations there, are you still using the BioMill disposal that you did last year as a benchmark in terms of valuations on a per-tonnage basis?
Yeah, the BioBio transaction was, I think, successful for both parties and is probably not the best relative guidance we can give. But, of course, it's always dependent on a seller and a buyer agreeing in a transaction. But I think it's probably fair to say what we have said in the past, that the Brazilian operations is not too dissimilar to the Chilean operations in terms of its market position, its cost position, etc. And of course, it's somewhat bigger, but it's relatively speaking, they are not too dissimilar. So I think that probably holds true as a sort of a very high-level guide.
Okay, that's helpful. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Charles Loriot of Limestone. Please go ahead.
Yes, hi, good afternoon. It's Charles Loriot from Limestone. Good afternoon, Sven. You mentioned earlier that you were expecting prices to increase during the course of the year. Can you just remind us for Europe and for the outside of Europe, what are the next big dates in terms of giving you an opportunity to raise prices? That's my first question.
It's applicable from the 1st of July now, so we will do the negotiations now and for the next few weeks, and the effect will be from start of the third quarter.
Right. So between now and July 1st, the we can assume that current market price will apply to any sale of because newsprint, a magazine in Europe and outside of Europe.
Inside Europe, yes. Outside Europe, it's a bit more dynamic. But in Australia, of course, we have the fixed price. So in broad terms, that comment is correct.
Okay, that's helpful. The second question is, sorry, just to clarify on the previous question regarding your expectation of cash generation during 2012. Did I hear you correctly? So when you talk about cash, you're talking about EBITDA, or you're talking about EBITDA minus CapEx? So I just wanted to clarify your definition of cash.
When we talk about cash, we don't want to burn cash, so we think that the operation should cover the operations, movements in working capital, etc., and it should cover the CapEx and the interest payments, but excluding any possible asset sales. That's what I'm talking about.
Okay, so basically everything before financing. Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Our next question comes from Timothy Horan of Blue Bay Asset Management. Please go ahead.
Good morning. On the cash flow guidance, what kind of assumptions are you guys making on trade credit for the rest of the year? Just kind of given the maturity profile, are you guys hearing anything from your on the accounts payable side?
I don't think we make any specific assumptions on the payables.
Okay, so are you assuming that trade credit will be flat or actually be a source of cash? Or?
I don't think we have any specific assumptions on the payables.
Okay, and then on the Skagen loans, does that have collateral in whatever the kind of improvement that it made at the mill?
Sorry, which one?
The Skagen Energy loan, the one that was asked about a couple minutes ago.
Oh, the Innovation Norway loan, you mean?
Yes.
No, this is a general loan for general purposes. So it's not tied specifically. It's of course the intention is for us to spend it on CapEx, which innovates the company, but it has no specific clauses. It's a normal finance.
Okay, but is that a secured piece of paper, or is it a...
No.
No? Okay. And then one last question. I was reading about these anti-dumping measures from Malaysia against certain European newsprint exports. What kind of... I'm not sure what the kind of tonnage from Europe to Malaysia is, and what kind of, you know, if successful, what kind of benefit that could have?
I think in Malaysia there has been successful anti-dumping against other countries in the past, mainly, say, Pacific Rim countries, and that has been in place for many years, meaning that the local market is not too bad for the local producer. Now, in the last couple of years, there has been some paper from Europe, and I think the idea locally is to use the this anti-dumping regime that exists also to make sure that this is not a loophole in the general anti-dumping system they have. But the tonnage remains relatively small.
Okay, that's all. Thank you.
We take our next question from Galia Willem of GLG. Please go ahead.
Hi. Most of my questions have been answered, but just one quick question I wanted to clarify, you know, the situation with security you know, whether or not under the current conditions of your RCF you can raise this receivables or securitization facility. How sort of, you know, flexible or prohibitive is it?
It's not prohibitive when it comes to accounts receivables.
So there are no restrictions under RCF to raise accounts receivables, debt collateralized by, securitized by account receivables?
In principle, we can use receivables as a collateral, yes.
And any limit on the amount?
No.
Okay.
But obviously, it's a commercial discussion, so...
So it's an issue of pricing, because, you know, that route, it looks like, you know, if it's fully open, that's the one you can pursue, probably, like, you know, it would be the easiest way to raise your money in the short term, at least.
Yes, I think we've said also in the past that this is it's a theoretical option that we have, and depending on the markets, it may or may not be used. But there's no limitation as such on doing such a facility.
Okay, thank you.
Our next question comes from Martin Beck of Hotek. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. It's Sofik, actually. Thanks for taking my question. I'm sorry, but we had a power outage, so my question might have been answered or not. The first one I have is on the price negotiations for the first half. My understanding is they have only been or had only been concluded a few weeks ago. So and obviously they're lower than Q4. Have these prices been reflected in Q1, or are we going to see the full effect in Q2 only?
They have been reflected fully in Q1.
For the full extent?
Yeah.
Okay. The second question I have is, remind me again, letters of credit, you don't have any sizable or significant portion outstanding, is that correct?
Correct.
Okay. And the last question I have is, given the fact that your capital structure looks a little bit unsustainable now, have you internally had discussions about a more comprehensive solution maybe to your balance sheet, i.e. financial restructuring, or is that something you haven't even discussed?
Not something we discussed. We have paid our bills and all our dues at all times, and we will continue to do so.
Okay, thank you.
And the next question comes from Simon Matthews of Citi. Please go ahead.
Hi, I just wanted to ask if you have any further comment with respect to the 20th of March press release about curtailing newsprint production at the Skogen facility. I'm interested to know what the rationale is behind the timing in June of that announcement of 130,000 tons, and perhaps you can help us to understand why it is that it's that particular facility that you've taken the decision to take temporary downtime in Europe. Thanks.
Yes. It's 160,000 ton on an annual basis machine, and it's true that it will stop in June, so this means that we had at the time of the decision, we had quite some orders we needed to fulfill from Skogn. And clearly this is the most marginal machine in the system for the time being, particularly exposed to exports and UK markets. So that's the reason why this machine was chosen. And why June? Obviously, we see that we don't want to put undue pressure on the market in front of negotiations for second half pricing. And particularly, I think it is important that we have a strong supply response to the pressures of the UK market. So I think this is the reason why we talk about June. When it comes to the longevity of the stop, that depends entirely on commercial factors and how successful we are with price negotiations in the going forward.
Okay, thanks very much.
Our next question comes from Priya Viswanathan of Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Beth. Thanks for taking the question. Just in terms of the capacity utilization within the quarter and, you know, what you expect going forward given the closures, we had a presentation from one of your competitors just a couple of days ago where they said that, you know, if all the capacity utilizations, if all the closures had actually taken effect a year ago, utilization in newsprint would be over 100%, and you know, elsewhere in paper would be just over 90%. So, can I just get a sense of, you know, where you think there are more closures that will be necessary for you to actually negotiate price increases, or the closures that have been announced should be adequate to sort of get to the pricing level where you know, cash generation would again begin to happen over the year.
I think the.
I just have a follow-up. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah. The short answer is that the capacity closures announced and that has already been done are enough to have a reasonable balance now, with the assumption that we see a volume shortfall in the second quarter, which is similar to the first quarter. It's sensitive, of course, to capacity closures, but it's equally sensitive to demand development. So with that assumption, it's okay. But having said all that, we would not mind further capacity curtailments in the industry. I still think there are quite some marginal machines running. But the short answer is that we think the curtailments that has been announced are enough for the time being.
Okay. Thank you for that. And what would be your, you know, the demand guidance that you are assuming for this to actually take hold? Is it something in the order of 10% demand decline overall through the year, or something more than what we saw in FY12? What is your sense on
demand? I think in Europe we've seen the first quarter now where we talk about 3-5% down, depending a little bit on the grades, with the magazine market somewhat weaker than the newsprint market, and we probably see in general for graphic papers in Europe, maybe a full year of 4-5% down.
So 4-5% overall decline, including magazine paper, is what you're assuming when you're
yes.
taking that the current closure should be adequate. Okay.
Yes.
Thank you for that. And just in terms of you mentioned, I think, during the press conference that you will be probably drawing down on the RCF for paying the coupons during Q2. So can I just get a sense of where you expect? You said that over through the year you will be, you know, breaking even on free cash flow. Would that also, I mean, so should we assume that there is going to be a negative development over the next quarter or so?
I think what is, well, first of all, these internet journalists sometimes misinterpret what we say a little bit, but what we said is that this facility is now unencumbered in the second quarter, and we also reminded them that most of our interest payments throughout the year falls due in June, at least an unproportionally large part of them fall due. And this facility obviously is for precisely these type of payments. Whether or not we will draw down on it remains to be seen. Still some time and a lot of in and outflows that will happen before that time. So that remains to be seen. But clearly the facility is available and is intended for these type of purposes. So I think that of course with the large interest payments after financial items, the second quarter is also going to be relatively challenging when it comes to free cash flow, but then the free cash flow, as always, picks up in the second half of the year.
Thank you. Just one last one there. So, the covenants, is there a point of time at which you can draw it down, or does that depend on how your negotiations go for Q2 in terms of the covenant reset? Or do they test for that particular quarter, say first quarter you are in compliance, and hence you can draw down at this point of time? How does this actually work practically?
It's the latter understanding, so we provide a compliance certificate after the quarter has been finalized.
Okay, so at this point you can draw down with no relation whatsoever to how the negotiation for Q2 proceeds?
Correct.
Okay, perfect. Thank you so much. Thank you.
We now have a follow-up question from Lisa Barash of UBS. Please go ahead.
Hello again. I was just wondering, I noticed you didn't buy back any bonds this quarter, so I was wondering if there was any particular reason, and then if you will still be buying back bonds opportunistically going forward.
I think the main reason why we have not been active is clearly the cash flow of the quarter, as we have had the redundancy payments in New Zealand, and we also see that the investment levels is, at least for us, somewhat higher than what we've seen over the last year, so that is probably the main reason. So the policy on bond buybacks have not really changed from what we have guided in the past.
Okay, thanks.
And we take another follow-up question from Edmond Dharmavan of GSO Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi. Could you please help us understand a little bit what's going on with the magazine business? Is the margin deterioration just solely because of prices and volumes, or is there adverse FX movements there as well for the first quarter? That'd be helpful. Thanks.
It's mainly this segment where we have taken deliberate downtime to try to minimize the negative price effects. This is the main reason why the results are poor. Obviously, on the market side, the lightweight coated segment is the weaker in the first quarter of our segments. So that is the main reason why it's at these very low levels.
So there's some operating costs that are still ongoing as the machine is not producing effectively, is what you're saying?
Yes, but if you take down volumes, you always have a higher per ton cost of the volumes you're actually producing and if you run through the... Yep.
Okay, and that at the moment that is only temporarily idle, and a decision will be made later this year whether or not that becomes permanent, is that correct?
These were mainly in the early parts of the year, but we, of course, we continue to monitor and match supply to market at all points in time, but the most of this was earlier parts of the year.
Okay, thank you.
The next question comes from Ida Carney of GLG Partners. Please go ahead.
Hello, hi. I had two follow-up questions. The first one concerns, just to ask the question again, obviously the covenants have not yet been changed on the existing lines which are undrawn. Can you tell us what the sort of main obstacles or issues that are coming up in the negotiations are? Is it a pricing issue, or what concessions are they looking for you, or from you rather, to roll that? And the second question was a follow-up to... just to kind of, again, balancing the market. Previously we'd heard, that there was a large Russian mill, Kondopogo, which might be converting or even shutting down capacity utilizations at very low levels. It seems that that it seems like that may not happen. So can you give me your views on that and any other closures that you think might happen, which could, in the short term at least, make the market more even?
I think the RCF discussion and the banks, I think the four banks in the facility all have, at least some of them have different motivations for being in the facility, to put it that way, and this is probably the main obstacle to have a more rapid and smooth process in terms of covenant resetting. When it comes to capacities, the Condopoga mill had shut down most of its seven machines, if not six out of seven probably, and two of the machines have restarted now towards the end of the first quarter. I still think there is work ongoing to convert parts or whole of the facility to other products, but that is clearly something that will take some more time. So I think you can see that the East European delivery figures, and particularly the Russian delivery figures, have been very low in the first quarter, which is to a large extent a supply issue out of Condopoga. So Condopoga's restart probably is not the main factor for the West European markets, but obviously we would welcome any mill or machine closure still, and there is still capacity in Europe which is quite marginal at this point in time, both in the
south. And just to because I don't know the asset as well as you, the shutdown and the restart, what kind of tonnage are we talking about there? I mean, you said, I think you said seven machines were down and two are restarting. I mean, what kind of implications has the restart got? And I assume the seven, were they shut down for the whole of Q1?
Six out of seven were down practically for Q1, and the total capacity from the port is just under 800,000 tons. Then clearly it also becomes a little bit speculative and if you go into run rates and all that type of thing. So I think you have to assume that now they run three out of seven machines now, and total capacity is 785. So you have to make your own pro rata assumptions.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the last number. What was that on the startup?
The startup, we know that they have announced that they start up two out of seven machines, but of course we don't have the details, so you have to assume the pro rata figures based on the total.
Okay. Was this a startup because they see improvement in the market, or just...
I think it has to do with the domestic Russian markets.
Okay. Thank you.
Our next question comes from David Gladstone of Moore Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good afternoon. A couple of quick questions. On the capital expenditures, can you give us a sense of what the minimum that is required to run this business, assuming no upgrades or conversions of existing mills? And the second question, I believe some of your contracts in Australia on the newsprint side are in the money, if you like, and they're good through, as you mentioned earlier, until mid-2015. Can you give us a sense of how much in the money they are, if they were sort of repriced today at spot prices, what kind of margin effect that would have on the newsprint outside Australia division?
The last part first. I think Australia doesn't really have a large spot market, as we are relatively few buyers and we are the only domestic suppliers. I don't think we can give any meaningful benchmark to that, and obviously these are prices in contracts with commercial counterparties, so I think we have a competitive advantage which we try to take care of, and we provide a good product and good services. So I think we may or may not be in the money. That depends a little bit on the eye of the beholder, I think. The second question, or first question, I must admit I forgot. What, can you repeat it, please?
Sure. Just on capital expenditures, what, assuming there's no conversions of mills, etc., what's the minimum you can run this business on?
The minimum guidance we've given on maintenance CapEx is about 300 million NOK. So if you take out all development and conversion projects, you would then about 300 million NOK.
Got it. Okay. Thank you very much.
As there are no further questions in the queue, I would now like to turn the call back over to your host for any additional or closing remarks.
That concludes the conference call. Thank you very much for participating.